This is Brian Wampler with another episode of the Chasing Tone podcast, the podcast about guitars, amps, effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions. Joining me today again is Blake Weiland, host of the Tone Mob podcast, entrepreneur, and effects pedal junkie, as well as Richard Oliver, Wampler's own man of many hats, longtime tone chaser, and digital entrepreneur. Hey, guys.
Yo.
Good morning.
Oh, boy.
Like Brad Paisley said, I've been better. That's a Brad Paisley song, if you don't know, by the way.
You're quite musical in these podcasts. You like to sing a bit, Bri. I've noticed.
I've been better. I miss those times that we've been together.
Uh-oh.
Anyways, you know, it's not auto-tuned, so, you know, just so you know. But
oh, you're not running. Oh, wow.
We should do a podcast, like a snippet sometime. You know what? I can do that in post. I'm going to auto-tune that.
So it's just auto-tune the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, it'll be T-Pain segment. Yeah.
Yes.
You'd have to auto-tune me to like a sub-bass frequency. I'd have to be like the rumble at the bottom there.
I'm going to make you a robot. I'll just robot your voice. You know, I could actually kind of change, like, I can make me a female or a female type voice, you know. Apparently, the plugin does that.
Okay, really? That's not something I particularly think we should experiment with.
It's actually handy. It's kind of interesting because I've said this before, like my singing voice is quite terrible. So I can change it so it sounds, you know, like a deeper, more, I guess what some might consider masculine or something. Because I don't know if you know, but I kind of have a high voice, you know, and it's interesting. So if I'm, you know, making a little song, I can just change my voice so I don't sound so stupid, I suppose.
You're like, you know what? I'm going to be Barry White today.
Right.
Nice. The kids will love that reference there, Blake.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, did I just old man on the kids a little bit? Oh, no.
Are we all boomers again?
Yes. I can take out the Kermit from my voice and
add in some Barry.
That's nice.
I wish I sounded like Barry White. How cool would that be to have that kind of voice?
I bet there's, Richard here could do it.
No, I'm not. It's very kind of you. And I notice you're looking at my large girth saying something about my weight, I'm sure. But
yes,
it's true.
All about your weight.
It's not true. No, my favorite deep bass singer was a guy called Stingray Davis, who sang with Parliament Funkadelic, famously did the sort of opening lines of Tear the Roof Off the Sucker, which is definitely on Brian's playlist right now.
Oh, yeah. I just listened to that just a minute ago.
He has the most amazing deep voice. It is like ridiculous. And I've got a video where the group are trying to taunt him to sing lower and he hits his lowest register. And I swear that auditorium was rumbling by the end of it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean because I remember in the 90s, I saw an artist called Trace Adkins.
Right.
In 90s
country stuff. And Trace had the most amazing live voice I'd ever heard. And it stopped me. I was like, holy. You know what I said? Yeah.
It
started
deleted.
With the F word. And like it was like
fungible,
fungible. Holy fungibles!
Fungible.
Yes, holy fungibles. That's a voice.
That guy really
actually
can sing.
Imagine you saying that.
He can sing like a mug.
I have no idea who you're talking about. Obviously,
and then he ruined everything by coming out with Honky Tonk Badonkadonk, and then I just didn't care anymore.
Yeah, you know what?
With what?
You nailed it, Blake. You nailed it because he is absolutely a fantastic singer. And then when the country completely just got shot down, I think, by most people, whenever things like Honky Tonk Badonkadonk came out. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That
ruined
even worse?
Country music. Not that song, but that era ruined country music. And that was part of that era.
Probably a good time to give a shout out to one of our listeners. I'm not going to mention any names to avoid embarrassment, but thanks for sending us in your lyrics to your country, your bro country song. We have all enjoyed that.
That was amazing.
That was fantastic. We love all the feedback you've been sending us, guys, so keep it up.
Yeah, it actually is pretty interesting.
It brightens my day. Somebody has also invited me to eat crab cakes in Baltimore. Unfortunately, I've seen The Wire, so thanks. Maybe if I get the old stab vest on. No, I'm kidding. Clearly kidding.
I'll eat crab cakes in Baltimore. I'm not worried about it.
Crab is a seafood that I can tolerate. Crab and lobster, I can probably do.
I have a policy with seafood. I do not eat seafood unless I can see the water.
Yeah, that's a good policy. I have a similar policy. I generally don't like to eat anything that has got more limbs than me. If it's got more limbs than me, it's probably not good for me to eat. So, you know, prawns, shrimp, octopus. No, I had octopus once. That's a weird meat. Have you ever had octopus?
No, I've had alligator, though. That was interesting.
I love alligator, and I like octopus as well, but octopus was way milder than I anticipated.
Flavor-wise.
Squid. Yeah.
I mean, and you kind of, I don't know how you had your octopus cooked. Mine was cooked on the rare side, and I expected the texture to be kind of squiddy, but it was more like mashed potato-y. It was very soft.
Oh, that was not my experience, no.
Oh, you had a rubbery octopus, did you?
Yeah, it was it was like a steak. They fried it in a pan, and they cut it real wide, so it was kind of like a steak, and it was quite good. I mean, I think I prefer squid, but I have a different policy than you, Richard. I say if it had a mother and a face, I'll eat it at least once.
Okay, all right. I think you've just won over our entire vegan audience. So,
I know.
Welcome on board, guys.
Yeah. I'm dumbfounded a bit.
Well, by Blake's theory of how to choose food.
Right.
You eat some good stuff, though, Blake. I've seen you write about it.
Yeah. I like to try weird things to try them just to like. I mean, I have my limits, but, you know, my dad absolutely will not
try. We do,
too. Like,
but yeah, Richard likes weird things, too, and he likes to try weird things, but this is a PG podcast.
Yeah, we said we weren't going to talk about that, but I have nearly built that that swing you sent over there, Brian.
Oh, yeah. I wondered if you liked that as much as I do.
Wait, it's not secondhand, is it?
Oh, it is. Yes. Oh, yes. No. It's fine now. It's fine. I washed it off with the garden hose. It's fine.
Them goats. Now, I don't know whether you guys caught the, I mean, it's a video that got widely shared on the internet from Dan Steinhardt from that pedal show. It was about not wanting to be or needing to be the greatest guitarist in the world. And I shared it on the Wampler page pretty much as soon as I watched the video because I thought it was really, really hitting home with me. And I wondered whether you guys had a chance to see it.
We'll be right back.
Is real music dying? What even is real music, and who are we to judge that? Well, my father is a lifelong musician, and together we've been making music for over a decade. In our new podcast, we dare to ask the urgent, the weird, and the deep questions, and we have a lot of wild stories to tell. No matter what genres you enjoy, whether you're a musician, a producer, or a listener, we invite you to discover unconventional perspectives on music. So tune in. And go follow Mad Makings of Music wherever you listen to podcasts.
I saw the headline, but I did not watch it yet. I can imagine what it contains, though. What were your takeaways?
Well, I completely concurred with my learned colleague because I realized that, you know, the thing he was really saying was it's about the lifestyle. It's about the people you meet. It's about loving what you do and having that passion. And for me, I know I'm never going to be the world's fastest shredder. In fact, I'm probably not even going to be close to the slowest shredder. I'm that's not how I play guitar, but I love playing guitar. I get so much pleasure out of it. Taking lessons has been the best investment I've ever made in myself. And I'm okay with that. I know that I'm never going to be, you know, Tom Quayle or someone like that. And I am literally surrounded by the best guitar talent in the world. You know, we have our own artists who I talk to, and obviously people in our groups are all fantastic guitar players. And I'm happy with that. I sit and take what I can from everybody, and I don't criticize myself. But if you go back 10 years, I was very critical about myself. But it's also, I realized without the music industry, I wouldn't have met my wife, a lot of my good friends. I mean, I was making EDM back in the 90s, which is how I met Anna. And it's the gift that keeps on giving. And it's about having that passion for creativity. It's not about being the best. It's just about loving creating stuff.
So in other words,
you're lazy. That's really what you're trying to say.
Yes, Brian, I'm the lazy one out of us two. That's correct.
That sounds like what people who are lazy say. You don't have to be good.
I mean, I practice a lot. I practice way more than I used to as a kid. I mean, I picked up the guitar at 15 and learned a few intros to a few songs and thought I was basically Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future. You know, I was like, yes, I can play Johnny B. Goode very badly and only about 1 minute. And that kind of started me off having the sort of arrogance of youth of, yeah, I'd two-finger tap and yeah, I can do that, you know. And actually, I then had very high standards for myself. But over the years, I just realized how much I love playing it, how much it relaxes me, it focuses me. My mind needs to keep learning something new, otherwise I get bored. And music has always been that gift for me. So Dan's video really struck home. It was, you know, it's like you don't have to hold yourself to standards that maybe you are not right for, but just enjoy what you do and you'll be good at it. So, yeah, I'm not lazy, Brian. You are.
I did not get a chance to see the video yet.
No, it's good. I think you'll like it.
No, I mean, I tend to think everyone like has their talents. You know, some people just pick up a guitar and within 6 months they're Andy Wood. You know, and you're like, how in the world did you get that good in 6 months? And then other people, you know, play for years, you know, decades, and would not be anywhere near what someone perceive as that good, right? Like some people, it's just different levels of talent.
I feel your eyes drifting over here to this screen a little bit.
Oh, you're so hard on yourself, man.
Yeah, some people like Blake. I don't know. I think at my ripe old age of my mid-40s, creeping up on 50 here, I never even consider, like, let's say I'm at a show and someone's playing. I don't ever think they're not good. They're not any good. You know, like I don't know how to explain it. Like it's not a competition. It's an art.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like no one's, I don't think anyone's competing to see how many notes they can get per minute. Maybe someone, I'm sure someone is somewhere, but you know, I mean, it's an art. So sometimes three notes can mean a lot more than 1,000 notes. And sometimes those 1,000 notes can mean more than those three notes. Like it depends where you're coming from, your paradigms.
I mean, what kind of overdrive are you using? Can't think of a guitarist where that would apply, you know, sort of three notes says more than 1,000 notes. Have to be like a really brilliant guitarist, wouldn't it, Brian?
I made that up.
Ah, damn. I nearly trapped him. Four notes and we would have had Shine On You Crazy Diamond.
So right, yeah.
No, I agree. But we are all built differently. That said, some people definitely, Tom Quail being a great example, have at least 8 brains, because there's no way any normal human being should be able to control their fingers the way he can.
Right.
It's insane.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. And you'll get to see, I don't know if you've ever actually been in the room with him when he's playing, but you'll, you know, be able to at NAMM. And, it's so effortless. Like, he'll have a conversation with you and be playing this crazy thing, like, cleanly, smoothly, and in perfect time. And it's just, you know, I'm like, I will never, there's no amount of practice that I'll be able to put in to do that.
No.
But MOSFETs, on the other hand, you know, we could talk about clipping with MOSFETs. Tom can't do that. Try that, Tom.
He probably
well,
can.
One
That's
thing
the,
that
the horrible can. Thing, yeah,
yeah.
I can't remember. I'm pretty sure I've talked about it. I know I've talked about it on my show multiple times, but I don't know if I've talked about it here or not. I interviewed Daniel Donato a few years ago, who's just fantastic. You know, he's an amazing player, but he made me feel a lot better about myself and my abilities because, you know, you do see those people who, I mean, he's obviously naturally gifted, right? But he was describing how, for years, he would lock himself in his room for 12 to 14 hours and do nothing but practice. And I'm like, well, I've never done that. And I'm never going to do that. And if that's what it takes to get to his level, you know, then he absolutely deserves it, because I'm never going to lock myself in a room and do nothing but play guitar for 14 hours. I never have, and I probably never will. And so there is a certain level of dedication that we'll never see. Like, I think most people would look at that guy and just be like, he's just good. He's just good, and that's all there is to it. And he is very good, but he's also put in more hours than most people have into anything. So, you know, that tends to be what happens when you put in a lot of work. You generally improve. It's weird how that works.
Yeah, I mean, I think they say it takes 10,000 hours to be an expert in something, right? So, you know, you can do the math. See, I left the S out just for our American audience on that. That's more days than I've got available if I only do an hour a day, right?
Yeah, so spending 12 hours a day playing guitar, I would get bored. I would just simply would get bored.
I struggle beyond an hour and a half to 2 hours, to be honest.
But, I mean, I think, I don't know, to me, honestly, like, that's where, like, circuitry stuff, I could literally just mess with circuits for hours and hours and hours and hours, and I lose track of time. It's like, that's, for whatever reason, that's probably more interesting to me than practicing my technique, you know. I don't know, teach his own, I suppose. Each their own.
No,
yeah,
Go ahead,
Richard.
I was just going to say, you know, I'm the same. If I zone out on a piece of design work, 6-7 hours can pass and I don't even realize it. But if I'm playing the guitar, I'm normally physically exhausted after an hour and a half. Like, I'll know how long I've been playing for, you know. Well, my hand is clearly not the rest of my body.
Yeah, and for me, it's like, I guess, I don't know, some might not consider this playing guitar necessarily 100%, and I guess it isn't, but I could surround myself with a mountain of effects pedals and spend all day just like finding new sounds. I'm like, oh, what if I run this stereo? Like, the rigs I assemble are so ridiculous.
Blake, you would be a perfect person to breadboard circuits because of that, because you could say, well, what happens when I combine this type of fuzz with this type of overdrive? What if I take this component with this other component and I put them together? And it's a lot like messing with pedals in that way. Like, what happens if I take a chorus and run it into a delay, or delay into a fuzz, or whatever? You know, so it's a very experimental thing.
Ironically, I just spent 3 days cleaning up the shred shed. It was a complete disaster. And I've had this laser cutter on my dining room table for like 4 months, and my wife was finally like, get that thing out of here. She was very patient with me, but I kept putting it off because the shred shed was such a disaster. I like generally didn't have anywhere to put it, Sorry, I got morning voice going on over here.
I have now seen pictures of the shred shed. It definitely is more of a funk bunker than it is a shred shed. Come on,
funk bunker.
That's
funk
huge, Blake. That's a lovely practice room.
I'm stealing that. I'm getting a sign that says funk bunker and putting it outside. That's
funk
amazing.
Bunker.
Everyone's got a shred shed.
It's bigger than it's smaller than it looks because the ceilings are really high. But it's a lot bigger than anyone needs. It's about 300 square feet in total. So
I literally
size of
that
a small English home.
I am
a size of a small English home. Yeah, it is bigger than any one person needs. That's for sure. It's kind of ridiculous. But I found my breadboard. That's where I was going with this. I discovered my Radio Shack breadboard that I bought like 8 years ago and then promptly did nothing with. So it's funny that you bring that up because I was like, I don't wonder what I should do with that breadboard over there. Maybe I should. I was literally thinking like I could try some simple fuzz circuits. I've thought about it. I've never done it before, but maybe I do need to go plug in stuff into the board and see what happens.
Yes, so, you do.
Over Christmas, and I think I mentioned it on an earlier episode of Chasing Tone, I breadboarded a small FM radio, and it did give me a little bit of a bug. So I dropped all these hints around Christmas, like, if only I had a friend who knew something about breadboarding, hoping that in the post I would get this lovely package of breadboard, wires, components. But no, Brian just sent me a load of new work to do instead. He's such a terrible friend. I'm kidding. I wasn't expecting it. I know you're tight.
Yeah, you know I'm tight. No, I want to put together some kits of some sort.
We should definitely do that. I really enjoyed the advent calendar approach. I want you to make me an advent calendar, tone bender, Mark One. Have I mentioned that enough yet?
You have. Yes.
Can that be made in 25 components? Or steps?
I'd have to count. I don't know off the top of my head. I mean, probably. What? I mean, the tone bender is not like a huge circuit in itself. You say that. I know why you say that. We were looking at pedals yesterday, just gut shots. I'm like, that's a big muff. And he's like, how do you know? I'm like, all you have to do is count the resistors, capacitors, the transistors.
Yeah, no, for the benefit of our listeners, literally, we were looking at the back sides of circuits and Brian was able to identify exactly what was going on with them. I was slightly upset at his levels of nerdery. He was like, yep, even though they've laid that out that way, I can see that that is definitely this, that, and this going into this. But we saw some pretty pedals. That was nice.
We'll be right back.
Did you know that you can change what you taste by what you hear? How can you use sound to make a deeper connection with your clients? Can we be healed with sound? Sound influences people in their buying decisions and their daily lives. In the podcast Audio Branding, I explore all of this, both with my own observations as a voice actor of over 15 years and by interviewing knowledgeable professionals in the field of advertising, marketing, music, and science. To have a listen for yourself, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com.
So are you saying without seeing the components, you could just see the back
just
of them,
the
like
backs
the solder
of the
components?
I mean, you could see some of the resistors.
You could see the components. It was the component side. So, yeah.
I was going to say some pedals have the circuit board flipped around so where you can just see the solder points. And I'm like, if you're X-ray visioning this thing, we're going to take your DNA and take it to CRISPR and see what's going on.
I'm a dork, but I'm not that level.
You are. You actually are. There was a point where you were looking at the traces going, no, if you look at how simple the traces are on that circuit, it's definitely a fuzz face. Nothing else would work. So you are that level of geek. I prefer that to dork.
Yeah. I suppose so. There's worse things that could be. It could be, though. You know, it could be some sort of, internet entrepreneur hack. You know,
follow me on with my course. I'll tell you how to get rich by selling people courses.
You've stolen our idea, Blake. This is literally our idea. Oh my! We need to set it up now.
Somebody else is going to get to it now, unless Brian edits this out.
Yeah, about 15 internet marketing companies have already got to it. Don't worry about it.
So what else we got? What else is going on in the world of gear today?
I made a demo yesterday for the first time in like 4 months.
Like you trying to get a record deal or what?
Oh, no. No, a pedal demo this time. Yeah, it'd been a long time since I'd gotten anything done on YouTube, partially because the shed was such a mess. It made the filming process so much more difficult than it needed to be because I'm an idiot and made the shed a mess. But yesterday I busted out the Fuzzrocious Pedals Lil Fella and did an 18-volt power, because the circuit really, I think, is way better at 18 volts than it is at 9, and with a baritone guitar. And that's my first demo of 2021, and I'm hoping to do a whole bunch more. So, yeah, that's what I've been up to the last few days.
Are you jumping back in the YouTube game?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to be trying to do that video every day for a month thing, because when I did that, I summoned the fire beast that tried to consume my entire... my entire state, basically. So I won't do that, but that's I'm definitely going to be more consistent with that stuff.
A video really will kill your soul.
That is very Portland black magic you're producing there, Blake. You want to avoid that.
Yeah, I'm not going to be doing that again. But
no,
I think at least bi-weekly, if not one a week. It just kind of depends on my schedule, but I want to do at least a couple videos a month, since it's a lot easier for me to do now.
I mean, I'm not going to say anything beyond this, and we're not allowed to, but I have seen some very good video footage of you recently, Blake, and I was well impressed.
What?
Aha. Moving what? On.
What?
No, not that video. Wait a minute. No. It's not a comment on your physique. And please don't go searching for Blake's sex tape, listeners. It's not something you need to see. So the other thing that I thought we should chat about is April Fools, and whether or not the gags are still funny. I think they are. And which were the best that you saw this year? So I will throw that back straight at you, Blake, for dropping you in the whole sex tape thing.
Well, I participated in one that I wasn't planning on participating in. It was literally the day before it dropped. I got a message from the Reverb folks, and they're like, "Hey, here's the concept. Can you give us a quick like cell phone video of you, you know, in on the gag, so to speak?" So I was a small part of the Maggie Cutlass video that Reverb put out.
Awesome.
I thought that was pretty funny. It was definitely like the most crafted one that's come out in a little while, you know. Andy took quite a bit of time to come up with that. And what was most shocking to me is the amount of comments that were like, "Oh, you totally had me till the end." I was like, "Really? Till the end?" I was like, I could see the first like 2 minutes maybe, but like till the end, you still thought that this was there was a pedal made by one person that was made to emulate the Barry Gibb falsetto. You thought that that was a real thing until the very end. I was really astonished by the amount of people that claimed to have gotten pranked.
That's quite a far fetch in terms of a product. I think ours was a little bit more believable, as we helped Andy Ferris out with his awesome Klon CT3 video.
Yeah, the boss Klon. Yeah,
that was great.
And I'm just going to give a massive shout out to Andy, because the amount of work he put into that video is phenomenal. Way more than I would have done. Mine would have looked a lot less professional in the end. He sprayed it well. He put the labels on so well. Brilliant work, Andy. But again, lots of people thought it was real. So, we got a couple of people with that one.
I'm still seeing threads on Facebook. People are asking, "Where's the boss? Where's this Bosque Centaur?" I'm like, "It's fake. Oh my gosh, man."
They should do one, fake. Though. They should make it real. That would be wonderful.
I mean, if anyone from Boss is listening, we'll definitely do a deal with the Tumnus. That's there for you.
Hey, speaking of Boss, I want to get one of their tone benders, but I can't find one. Y'all got a place I can go to?
I think good luck. I think you missed the boat on that one.
I think you need to go about 3 months into the future to get one at the moment.
Well, they're going to be $5,000.
Great result for them though.
Mm-hmm.
I
was really close to pulling the trigger on one of those just because, and then I was like, that you don't need that. I know need has nothing to do with it, but I was just like, I've got tone benders. I'm okay.
I don't, and I'm not going to lie. I too have spent the last couple of days flitting between, shall I buy an Epiphone ES335 or shall I buy one of those fuzzy tone bendery pedals that Boss have just brought out that I can't find. Luckily, both products are out of stock everywhere, so I'm all right at the moment. I haven't succumbed to gas, but it's there.
We've got to find you an Epiphone 335.
I'm going to get one.
In love with that guitar. Still in love with it. Still.
You mentioned the pickups are difficult to change, though.
I think that's any style of semi-hollow like that.
Yeah, it's just pretty much.
All you have is the little holes to kind of try to wiggle your fingers in through there. Like you just don't have a lot of space to mess with electronics like you would with a Strat or a Tele or something like that.
Just cut the wires at the pickup end and tape them together. That'll probably work, right?
Sure. Sure, yeah.
Sure.
No, I've been looking at them. There is on Anderton's website, they have nothing in stock that is in my price range, but there is a satin black Gibson 335 that's the most affordable of all the 335s, coincidentally. And I did look at that, but then I thought, this Epiphone just looks like it's going to hit the spot, so I'm going to wait for that to come back in stock. And then I shut my browser and walked out of the room, immediately went into another room, opened my phone up and started looking again. No, I've got to stop it, and I blame you, Brian.
You actually don't have to stop, and you need to follow this path until you are able to achieve your goal, Richard.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, that's really what you're doing wrong. You're being
this
lazy.
Is why
again.
I love you.
No one likes a quitter. Nobody likes a quitter. No one.
Okay. All right. Well, I will get one at some point this year.
I keep waiting to hear back from Sweetwater. I'm like, when's it in stock? Bring it,
so the Emily Wolf one, that's a Sheraton, right?
Yes, correct.
So is that a thinner body than a 335?
They're slightly about the same from my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm really confused by... Yeah, I think it's minuscule, but I'm really confused by all Gibson nomenclature. I've never figured it out. I know that a 339's got a smaller body than a 335. But that's about as far as I go.
Wait till you get into Gretschland. Then you'll be super confused.
I went there today. I'm not going to lie. I thought, I'm going to have a look at what my local guitar shop has got, because I like to support those guys. And they had a couple of D'Angelico guitars, which looked really awesome. And they had a couple of Gretsches. And I was like, these are cheap. I mean, obviously, they're the made in Malaysia ones, but Gretsch is a nice name to have on a headstock.
I've played the lower end Gretsches from recent years, and I really like the Electromatic line. My friend Leon had one for a really long time, and it was a great guitar. I was like, this thing is cool. And I actually liked it better than some of the higher end ones I played. So I would definitely not shy away from Gretsch.
You know, I've never had one of those, like with a Bigsby style drum. Mm-hmm. I haven't had one of those since I was maybe 11 or 12 or somewhere around there. And so I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, I could buy another 335 of some sort with a Bigsby.
Mm-hmm. You could.
And
you should.
Then I started thinking, but is it like changing strings on a Floyd Rose? Because if so, I'm out.
Oh,
it's a lot better.
Now we're talking, Brian.
And there's some tricks. There's some tricks to it.
You need a six pack of Bud Light to even contemplate changing the strings on a Floyd Rose.
Well, this weekend being the Easter weekend just gone, I completed what I like to call the dad trifecta. I mowed my lawn, I washed my car, and I washed all my pets. But more than that, I changed the strings on my Floyd Rose based guitar, which is my Friedman Cali.
While listening to Poison's greatest hits.
Absolutely, while listening to both of Poison's greatest hits. Normally, I'm a bit weird. I actually like changing strings. I find it quite therapeutic. I can stick some tunes on. Definitely not Poison. And, you know, I can polish my guitar up, put some strings on it. And if it's a vintage tuner set up, they're just so easy to pop in. All feels great. Love it. With a Floyd Rose, you kind of need to go through a multi-stage process on each string that requires some scientific formula based on string length. Then there's some kind of tension calculation. Then you've got to work out the angle of the sun relative to where you're sat in the earth. And then eventually you put it all together, clamp it down really quickly, and hope it stays in tune, I think.
You forgot about the direction that Mars is currently pointed in relation to you as well. That's a crucial part of the calculation.
You have to calculate the gravitational pull of Mars, I think.
That's right. And how it's impacted by the current Mars rover that's on it. That's going to impact how your strings are.
I've got that figured, because once they launch the helicopter, it's a bit lighter again, so it's fine.
Okay,
it's
absolutely that's fine. Right.
So, yes, I successfully completed. I mean, my method with Floyd Roses, which I have now developed over exactly one change of the strings, is to do kind of alternate pairs. So the string six and five, the E and the A string, then the high E string, and then clamp them down and hope it all works. It went okay, but why are they so difficult to do? Why are there so many steps? Why do I need a whole toolkit just to do that?
Well, I can tell you my methods on change. I have two guitars with Floyd Roses, and here are my methods. I start out by cutting all the strings off. I then put a set of strings on it. I then put the guitar in the case, take it to my local luthier, and say, I quit. Fix this, please.
I mean, blocking the trem is really helpful. I stuck a bit of sponge under there, so the tremolo stayed roughly the same position, and it feels like I did a good job. So I'm going to give myself a virtual high five for it. the sad thing is I've had that guitar for a year, and this is the first time I've changed strings on it. So I haven't played it as much as I'd like to, because I was always conscious, like, if you get those strings screwed up, you're going to have to change them. So don't play that guitar so much. But now, lovely, fresh string joy strings on it. Oh, quick plug there for you, Blake.
Oh, thank you. I was going to do a plug for them myself, because ironically, I almost never talk about Floyd Roses, but this has been something that's cropped up in the String Joy inbox a bunch, is will your strings work on a Floyd Rose when you get into heavier gauges? And because I'm not a Floyd Rose player, I wasn't aware that super heavy gauge strings were an issue for a lot of those, because you had to unwind some of them in order to get them locked in place. In certain situations, I'm not entirely familiar with the whole process, but I talked to Scott about it, and he was like, oh, make sure when you're talking to those people, you tell them the trick is to actually snip it at the ball end as close to the ball as possible and use that in the part that gets crushed down, because there's enough meat on the way they make their heavier strings that they won't shear off. Some people have a problem with them shearing off when they get into heavier gauges, which is not something I was familiar with because I don't play a Floyd Rose. So there you go.
Interesting. I mean, I cut mine right before the wrap, before the ball end, because I didn't want to be sticking the wrappy bit in there. But interesting.
You're not playing crazy heavy gauges, though, so that's probably okay.
No, I'm playing 10 to 46s, so it's
completely so that's probably
regular.
Fine. But if you start playing a 95 with your Floyd Rose, you want to get the wrappy bit in there if you can. So
a 95, that's like bass strings.
We make up to a 95 for guitar, and they are differently constructed than our bass strings are. We actually might start making up to a 105 in guitar here pretty soon.
What?
Mm-hmm. That's a telephone wire.
Yes, big. It's real. Yeah, big. We have so like many genty boys that want those big beefy strings. They're playing in drop Q. So
you know. Drop Q. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the standard gent tuning, is it? Drop Q.
Drop Q. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You learn something new every day on this podcast.
I like Q flat myself. But
drop Q flat. Yeah, that's a good one. The saddest of all keys.
Right. All right, boys, that's probably a good place to, I know it's a little bit of a shorter episode, but I've got stuff I've got to do today.
Same.
So I'm going to have to end this one a little bit short, but thanks for joining me.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com. That goes straight to me. Email Blake. Email info@tonemob.com, and Richard is richard@wamplerpedals.com. If you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends and others who might like it. If you'd like to show your support for the show, the simplest and free way to do that is just simply to share this with a friend. Maybe leave a review and a rating wherever you normally get your podcasts. Make sure to check out Blake's podcast called The Tone Mob. It's a great one as well. And make sure to check out Wampler Pedals. That's our website for blogs, videos, and of course, our little toneful gadgets, our little pedals and amplifier. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.